There was a beat of silence where I figured Morelli was staring down at his shoe and counting his lucky stars he never married me.
That's what you called to tell me? I'm a jerk?
I called to tell you I just got a floral arrangement. Red roses and white carnations. I read the card to him. The flowers were ordered through the hotel and placed on Carl Rosen's credit card. You might want to remind the Rosen family to cancel Carl's cards. It looks like the killer lifted Rosen's MasterCard.
He's loving this, Morelli said. This is like a chess game, and he's winning. He's taking your pieces one by one.
This particular piece was with Susan Liu first thing this morning and hasn't been heard from since. I don't suppose you have Bart Cohn in custody?
Not in custody, but he's being watched. He's not in Vegas. I'm almost sure of it.
What about the other Cohns?
All three were in for questioning late yesterday afternoon. It's Saturday, so they're not at work, but I'll make sure they're tracked down and accounted for.
I'm going back out to talk to Susan Liu, I said to Morelli. I'll call you if anything turns up.
I'd feel better if you just stayed in your hotel room until your plane. Let the Vegas police talk to Susan Liu.
I'll be fine. Ranger had a care package dropped off for me. And I've got Lula and Connie to watch my back.
Oh, shit, Morelli said.
This is like Christmas, Lula said, opening the box from Ranger. I love getting presents. Look at this. Pepper spray. One for each of us. And handcuffs. Not the cheap-ass kind, either. These are good quality cuffs. And leg shackles. And a .38 Smith & Wesson snubby revolver. Guess that would be yours since I shoot a Glock. And here's a box of rounds for your .38.
Lula pawed through the packing.
Hey, there's no Glock. Where's my gun?
She dumped the box upside down, and a note and a stun gun fell out. I took the note and left the stun gun for Lula. Call if you need help. I'll come to your room at 6 to take you to the airport. Eric. His phone number was printed at the bottom of the note. Lula was reading over my shoulder.
Who's Eric?
Ranger said he was sending hardware to replace what we lost in luggage. It looks like Eric comes with the hardware. I loaded the .38 and slipped it into my purse. I stuffed the personal-sized pepper spray canister into my jeans pocket. I stuck the cuffs half in and half out of the back of my pants, and then I shrugged into a lightweight zipper-front sweatshirt that was going to make me sweat, but it covered the cuffs. I called to ask that the car be brought around from valet parking.
I'm going too, Connie said. Give me 5 minutes to jump in the shower.
A half hour later, the three of us left the room for the lobby. Lula on one side of me, Connie on the other. Connie had made a phone call to a local bondsman and had arranged for a second arms delivery. As a result, Connie and Lula now wore two guns apiece. They each had a gun at the small of their back, and they each had one in their purse. My fear of getting shot by the carnation killer was considerably less than my fear that I'd get shot by Connie or Lula.
You know what I think, Lula said in the elevator. I think we're an accident waiting to happen.
I could ask Eric to ride along with us, but I'd had some past experience with Ranger's men, and there was no guarantee that Eric would be any less scary than the carnation killer.
Just keep your eyes open. We'll be fine.
Connie didn't say anything. Connie had some mafia skeletons in her closet, and Connie took soldiering seriously. It was afternoon when we pulled into Susan Liu's driveway. Lula, Connie, and I got out and went to Liu's front door. Susan Liu was about 5 feet 4 inches, with a flat, dish face and glossy, straight black hair. She looked older than Singh. I placed her somewhere between 40 and 45. She was surprised to find us on her porch and immediately bristled. Probably we looked like door-to-door missionaries, so I understood the bristle. I looked over her shoulder at a small curly white dog scratching at a baby gate that confined him to the kitchen. Boo. I identified myself, introduced Lula and Connie, and I asked if we could come in. Lou said no, and we went in anyway. Lou was a lightweight. I already knew Singh wasn't in the house. The car still wasn't in the driveway. And besides, I was pretty sure he was dead. Still, I asked anyway.
Is Samuel Singh here?
I asked Susan Liu.
He isn't, Liu said. He went out first thing this morning for a pack of cigarettes for me, and he hasn't returned. He should have been back hours ago. And he isn't answering his cell phone. Men are such shits. Listen, I'd like to chat, but I have to get ready for work, and I'm not feeling all that social without my goddamn cigarettes.
The dog was barking now, yap, yap, yap. And every time it yapped, its little front paws would come off the ground. Is that Samuel's dog?
Yeah. I don't know what's wrong with it. Usually the little turd just mopes in the corner. I've never seen it trying to get out like this.
Lula took a step back and nervously shifted foot to foot. God only knows what she had in her purse. Suckling pig? 2 dozen hamburgers? A 20-pound turkey?
Sammy brought the dog with him just to piss off some awful old woman and her daughter. He was boarding with them, and he said the old woman was something out of a horror movie. He wanted to take a picture of himself with the dog and send it back to them, but he hasn't gotten around to it. After he gets his picture, the dog's going to the pound. Nasty beast.
I gave Susan Liu my card. Tell Samuel to call me when he comes in.
Sure.
Connie and I left Liu, got into the car, and I backed out of the driveway. I drove around the block and parked 3 doors down from Liu, behind a van so we could watch the house.
You think Singh's gonna show up? Lula wanted to know.
Nope.
Me neither.
You park in here so you can keep an eye on Liu?
Yep.
You're waiting for her to leave and then you're gonna snatch the dog, aren't you?
Yep. Connie was in the back seat, probably reviewing in her mind which of the local bondsmen she'd use to bail us out after we were arrested for breaking and entering. After 15 minutes of no air conditioning, the car started to bake under the desert sun. Lula immediately fell asleep in the heat. She was head back, mouth open, and she was snoring. Loud.
Holy mother, Connie said. I've never heard anyone snore like this. It's like being locked in a car with a jet engine.
I gave Lula a shove.
Wake up. You're snoring. The hell I am, Lula said. I don't snore.
And she went back to snoring.
I can't take it, Connie said. I've got to get out of the car.
I joined her, and we walked down the street. We were wearing baseball hats and dark glasses, but no sunblock, and I could feel the sun scorching the exposed skin on my arm.
Let me run through this, Connie said. Lillian Parisi, Howie at McDonald's, Carl Rosen, and possibly Samuel Singh are all tied to the same serial killer. And now, he's targeted you.
I don't know about Howie, Carl, or Samuel, but Lillian Parisi received red roses and white carnations in a note just before she was killed.
Like the flowers and notes you've been getting.
Yeah, so I'm guessing he likes to taunt his victims, likes to get them afraid before he strikes. Some kind of game for him.
Are you sure it's a him?
I'm not sure of anything. In the beginning, I suspected Bart Cohn, but the police are keeping a close watch on him. If Cohn's still in Trenton and Singh turns up dead, that eliminates Cohn from the suspect list. When we got back to the car, Lula was still snoring, and there were 2 dogs patiently sitting on the curb by the passenger side door.
I don't know what's more creepy, Connie said. You getting stalked by a killer, or Lula walking around with a purse filled with pork chops? I'm feeling like I'm in Stephen King land.
It was 2 o'clock, so I called Calafonte and asked if Singh was there. Calafonte said no, sorry. I gave Calafonte my cell number and asked him to call me if Singh showed up. Connie and I got back into the car and put our fingers in our ears. After 5 minutes, my shirt was soaked and sweat was running down the side of my face. This was the glorious life of a bounty hunter.
Tell me again why we're sitting here melting, Connie said.
The dog.
I need a better reason.
There's something about that dog that gives me an estrogen attack. He's small and helpless looking, and those little button eyes, the eyes are so trusting. And he's going to the pound.
Awful is that? I can't let that happen. So you have to save the dog. He's counting on me. Stephanie to the rescue, Connie said.
I could call you a cab, I said, and you could go back to the hotel.
No way. I'd have to sit around the pool and get a tan and have half-naked waiters bring me cold drinks. Where's the fun in that when I could be sitting here listening to Lula.
Susan Liu left the house a little after 2. She walked to a bus stop on the far corner. After 5 minutes, a bus appeared, and Liu got on.
Thank God, Connie said. I'm at the end of the line with the snoring and the sweating.
I gave Lula a shove. Wake up! Susan Liu left the house. We can get the dog now. Lula squinted at me.
I feel like my eyes are fried. I'm not as young as I used to be. I can't do this all-night shit anymore. And this place is hotter than snot. How can anyone live here?
I cranked the car over and pulled into Lou's driveway. Lula, Connie, and I got out and walked around to the back kitchen door.
Door's locked, Lula said. Too bad you had this thing about busting in.
This is for a good cause, I said. I suppose we could force the door if we did it really carefully.
Huh, Lula said.
She swung her purse into the window beside the door and shattered the window.
Oops, Lula said. Guess I accidentally broke a window.
Then she reached in and opened the door.
Cripes, Connie said. Could you make more noise? Maybe there's someone left in the neighborhood who didn't hear that.
I tiptoed over the glass shards, scooped up Boo, and handed him to Lula. I quickly walked through the rest of the house. I took Sing's laptop, but found nothing else of interest. I wiped Lula's prints off the doorknob, and we left.
We're like Robin Hood or something, Lula said. We rescued this cute little guy. I feel like singing the Robin Hood theme song.
We stopped and thought about that for a second.
Damn, Lula said. There's no Robin Hood theme song.
We got into the rental Taurus and hightailed it out of the neighborhood. Best not to delay, in case someone confused us with dog nappers and called the police. The police might not understand about Robin Hood. I stopped at a supermarket and bought a dog leash and collar and a small bag of dog food for Boo. I bought popsicles for Connie and me and 2 pounds of sliced deli ham for Lula. I didn't know if dogs were allowed at the Luxor, and I didn't think it was worth the hassle to check. I wrapped the dog in my sweatshirt and smuggled him up to the room.
Isn't this a pisser? Lula said, going into the room. Look at what's here. My luggage. Came just in time to lug it back home.
Hopefully they won't lose it this time.
Damn right they won't lose it. I'm not flying. I'm done flying. I'm driving home.
It'll take you days.
I don't care. Nothing you could say would make me get back on a plane. I got the rental car, and I'm driving. And I can take Boo. I don't like the idea of handing him over to those airport people.
Boo was on the floor, snooping around.
He's a cute little guy, Lula said. I can see why Nani wanted him back.
I had a problem now. There was a small chance that the flowers were a hoax and something other than death had kept Sing from showing for the job interview. I didn't want to take off only to find out down the road that Sing was alive and well in Vegas. I called Morelli and Ranger. Neither had anything to report. I called my family next.
We're all fine, Grandma said. Except for Albert, who seems to be in labor. That is impossible, is it?
When I was a kid, my family seemed so stable. I was the flaky kid, and my mom was always right. My sister was perfect. My dad was the rock. It hasn't been until recently that I've come to realize nothing is that simple. People are complicated and chock full of problems. That said, my family's problems don't seem so huge. We're a family of plodders. We put one foot in front of the other and keep going forward, and eventually we get someplace. Maybe the place isn't spectacular, but it's a place all the same. And while we're plodding, sometimes the problems solve themselves. Sometimes the problems get pushed low on the list of priorities and get forgotten. And sometimes the problems cause little pockets of irritation in our bowels. Mostly, we solve our problems with cake. I was hungry, and I would have liked to order room service, but I was afraid Boo would be discovered. Room service is third on my list of favorite things. Birthday cake is first. Sex is second, and then room service. Room service is better than having a mother.
You order what you want, and they bring it to your door, guilt-free, no strings attached. Pretty amazing, huh?
I'm going out for something to eat, I said. And I'm going to check on Susan Liu. I want to make sure she really did go to work.
I'm with you, Lula said.
Connie was on her feet.
Count me in.
The three Mouseketeers.
We gave Boo a glass of water and told him to be a good dog. We put the Do Not Disturb sign on the door, locked up, and left.
According to Connie's information, Susan Liu worked at Caesar's. Caesar's was exactly the wrong distance from the Luxor. Too short to feel justified taking a cab. Too long to hoof it in the heat. We stepped outside and sucked in blast furnace quality air, and Connie made the decision for us.
I'm not walking, she said, and I'll shoot anyone who tries to make me.
Caesar's is everything a casino should be. Noisy, smoky, gaudy, and bustling with people who can't wait to throw their money away. And if that isn't enough, it has a terrific shopping center. The waitresses serving the game tables all wore little toga outfits. Some looked better in their togas than others. I suspected Lou would not look wowie-kazowie in her toga. We did a casual walk around the room and didn't spot Susan Liu.
This isn't going to work, Lula said. It's too big. There's too many of the toga women. And there are cocktail lounges on the sides, too, and restaurants.
I don't know how to break this to you, Connie said, but I think we're being followed. You see the guy in black over by the statue of Caesar?
Lula and I turned and looked.
Don't look,
Connie hissed. Lula and I stopped looking.
You have to be sneaky, Connie said.
Lula and I did a sneaky look. I don't recognize him, I said. Connie slid him a sideways glance.
He was in the lobby of the Luxor when we came through.
Probably just a coincidence, I said. He was about 5 feet 10 inches and average build. He wore a black suit, black shirt, and black silk tie. His hair was dark and slicked back behind his ears.
I bet he's got a purple car with a bobblehead doll on the dash, Lula said. I bet he's a pimp. I guess I know a pimp when I see one. The question is, why would a pimp be following us?
Connie and I looked at Lula.
What?
Lula said. Lula was wearing a skin-tight pink stretchy t-shirt with sexy written across her boobs in silver sequins. It had a low scoop neck, showing an acre of cleavage, and it was tucked into a matching spandex miniskirt.
Hey, I'm not the one wearing a shirt asking if you got crabs,
Lula said. I looked down at my shirt. It's for the baseball team in Lakewood. Joe bought it for me.
Huh, Lula said.
I didn't think the guy in black looked like a pimp. I thought he looked like someone who bought GQ and took it seriously. Probably he was from L.A. and worked in the CAA mailroom.
Let's go across the room and find a blackjack table, Connie said to me. See if he follows you.
Fine, but I can't play blackjack. I'll just stand and watch.
That's ridiculous, Connie said. Everyone can play blackjack. All you have to do is count to 21.
Connie was pulling me along by my purse strap.
I'll have Vinnie bankroll you.
You play blackjack.
That won't work, Connie said. I want to see if he's after you. Maybe he's the carnation guy. This way you sit down and Lula and I can sort of fade away, all the while keeping our eyes on you. Then we wait to see what he does.
Here he comes, Lula said. He's coming along with us. He's trying not to be noticed, but I'm on to him.
Connie tugged me toward an empty chair.
Sit, she said. There's an opening at this table.
This is a $25 table, I said. Aren't there any loose change tables? There were two men and two women already playing at the table. They were drinking and smoking, and their faces were without expression. They looked like they knew what they were doing. They'd look at the dealer and tap the table, and obviously that meant something. One of the women wanted to double. She lost her chips after that, so I made a mental note not to double. When the hand was done, Connie dropped $50 on the table. The dealer gave me two chips, and the $50 got whisked away by the dealer and stuffed into a slot on the table. Everyone put chips out, so I put one out too. I looked over my shoulder at Connie. Connie was gone.
When I swung my attention back to the table, I had two cards face up in front of me, a king and an ace.
21 wins, the dealer said, and he gave me a bunch of chips.
Wow, I won. I didn't even have to do anything. Everyone else played out their hands, and then we all started again with new chips on the table. I put mine out, too. The dealer gave me two cards face up, a six and a jack.
Panic. I had to add. A jack was worth, what, 10?
Okay, 10 seemed reasonable for a jack, so I had 16. I looked around. Everyone was waiting for me to say something. The dealer asked me if I wanted a card.
More panic. I didn't want to go over 21. I had to subtract. I hate to subtract.
Sure, I said. Give me another card.
The dealer asked me if I was certain I wanted another card.
You have a six showing, and the book says not to take another card, the dealer said.
I didn't know what book he was talking about, but all the other players agreed with the dealer and the book, so I decided not to take a card. The dealer had a six and a ten on the table. He dealt himself another ten.
Dealer busts, he said.
And I got another chip. Hot damn. No wonder people like to gamble. This was easy.
We started a new game, and I got 16 again with the first two cards. The dealer had a nine showing. I told him I didn't want any more cards. What the hell, it worked the first two times. Now he told me the book didn't like that decision. Well, God forbid I should go against the book.
Okie dokie, I said. I'll go with the book and take another card.
I got dealt a king of hearts.
Busts, the dealer said,
and he took my chips and my cards. So much for the book. I played another hand, lost another chip. Everyone played their hands out, and we started over. Connie was nowhere to be seen. The guy in black was behind me, watching me. I could feel him back there. The photo images of shattered skulls popped into my head. The memory of the heat and numbing blackness that followed the hit from the dart washed over me. I felt a panic attack trying to get a toehold. The dealer wanted to know if I was going to play.
What?
I asked.
You need to put a chip into play.
I shoved a red chip into my circle.
Red chips are worth 10, the dealer said. This table has a $25 minimum.
I pushed a different colored chip at him. The chips had numbers on them, but I was too flustered to make sense of it. The dealer gave me a 10 of spades and a 2 of hearts. This was easy to add. 12. A long way to go to 21, right? I asked for another card. This started a lot of arguing. Apparently, the book wasn't clear on this one. The dealer gave me a 10 of diamonds.
Damn. Busted again.
I didn't know exactly how much I had because I was having a hard time adding up all the different colored chips, but I knew I didn't have a lot. One more hand, maybe. When the new game started, I pushed a couple chips into my ring. The dealer gave me a 9 of spades and a 3 of clubs. I bit into my lower lip, unsure what to do, and I felt a hand settle on my shoulder. I turned and looked. It was the guy in black.
I'm going to help you, he said.
There was a lot of noise behind me. I heard Lula let out a shriek, and the guy in black gasped in surprise, jerked away from me, and went over backward. Everyone at the table stood and gawked, including me. Lula and the guy in black were on the floor. Lula was ass up on top of the guy in black. You could hardly see him under the pink spandex. He was squashed spread-eagle under Lula, so that only his hands and feet stuck out. Connie was standing on one of his hands.
"Don't freaking move!"
Connie yelled at the poor, smooshed guy in black. From what I could see, there wasn't much chance of him moving. I wasn't even sure he was still breathing. Uniformed and plainclothes security instantly appeared and wrestled Lula off the guy in black.
"He was going for a gun," Lula said. "He's a killer!"
The guy in black didn't move. He was still on his back, gasping for air.
"I have identification in my inside jacket pocket," he said. "And I think I have a broken back."
"Can you move your toes?" one of the security guards asked him.
"Yeah,
How about your fingers?
He wiggled the fingers on one hand. Connie was still standing on the other hand.
Ow,
the guy in black said to Connie. Connie stepped off his hand.
Sorry,
she said. One of the plainclothes men lifted the identification.
Eric Salvatore. Looks like he's a rent-a-cop.
I'm a licensed private investigator and a security specialist, Salvatore said. I'm employed by Rangeman LLC, and I was asked to protect Miss Plum while she's in town. God only knows why when she's got Big Bertha and the Bone Crusher with her.
He was Ranger's man. Rangeman was Ranger's corporate name.
Hey, Lula said. Watch who you're calling Big Bertha. Nobody tolerates that political incorrectness anymore, you little candy ass.
This was a terrible misunderstanding, I told everyone. My friends and I didn't realize he was assigned to guard me. My usual bodyguard missed his flight. Now they were all wondering who the hell I was that I needed a bodyguard. And that was fine by me, because I wanted this to go away. We were all carrying guns, probably illegally. I had no idea what the gun laws were in Nevada.
I thought he was going for a gun, Lula said.
Eric struggled to get up.
I was going for my wallet. I was going to buy her some chips. I was supposed to keep my distance, but I couldn't stand watching her play anymore. She's the worst blackjack player I've ever seen.
Really sorry, I said. Can we take you to a hospital or something?
No, I'll be okay. Probably just a slipped disc and possibly a broken bone or two in my hand.
Don't worry about 6 o'clock, I called after him. I might not be going to the airport. He looked at me blank-faced, as if taking me to the airport was too terrible to contemplate right now.
Okay,
he said, and he limped away. Sorry, I said to the security people. I guess we'll be going now, too.
We'll see you out, one of the uniforms said.
We were escorted out of Caesar's. The doors closed behind us, and we stood blinking in the sun, waiting for our eyes to adjust to daylight.
That was sort of embarrassing, Lula said.
I whipped my phone out and I called Morelli. Reporting in, I told him. Anything new?
I was just going to call you,
Morelli said.
I know a guy on the Vegas police force. I gave him a call when I got off the phone with you and asked him to keep his eyes open for Singh. I just got a call back from him. They found Singh in his car in the airport parking lot about an hour ago. Shot twice in the back of the head, close range. We're checking the passenger lists on all Vegas flights in and out of LaGuardia, Newark, and Philadelphia.
I had a moment's pause where I didn't know what I felt. There was an emotion struggling around inside me. Relief that there was closure on the Singh hunt. Disappointment that I hadn't been able to save him. And dread. The killer's constant presence was wearing me down. The cones? I asked.
All present and accounted for.
Too bad. That would have been so easy. At least I can leave Vegas now. And I'm bringing something home with me that might be helpful. Singh's laptop. Silence at the other end.
Susan Liu gave it to you?
I found it on the sidewalk. I think there might have been a break-in and the laptop got dropped and left behind somehow. And I found it. I wasn't sure what was going on at the other end of the connection. Either Morelli was smiling, or else he was banging his head against the desk. I was going to go with smiling.
I'll pick you up at the airport,
Morelli said.
Try to stay out of trouble. Do you need a police escort when you leave your hotel?
No, I've had enough police escorts for one day. Thanks anyway. I disconnected and relayed the information about Singh. The Vegas police found Singh at the airport an hour ago. 2 bullet holes in the back of his head, I told Connie and Lula.
I was sort of hoping it was a bluff, Lula said. That the killer wasn't really here, and he sent you the flowers to get you to go home. Not that I'm scared or anything.
We all did some mental knuckle-cracking and tried not to look nervous. We should go back to the hotel, I said. If we're going to make the plane, we need to pack. Everyone agreed, so we flagged down a cab and we all piled in. I called Ranger on the way. I told him about Singh, and then I told him about Salvatore.
I already talked to Salvatore, Ranger said. His hand is okay, but he said he needs a chiropractor for his back.
Ranger paused, and when he continued, I could hear the laughter in his voice.
Salvatore said a fat woman in pink spandex and silver sequins fell on him.
That would be Lula, and she didn't fall on him. She tackled him.
She did a good job, Ranger said. I'm sorry I missed it. Salvatore's partner will take you to the airport.
How will I know him?
He looks like Salvatore, but more.
5 minutes later, we were walking through the hotel to the elevators, and we were being very vigilant. We didn't know what the killer looked like. It didn't seem likely that he would strike in a public place, but there was no guarantee. We took the elevator to the 18th floor, walked halfway down the hall, and Connie unlocked our room door. She stepped in and muffled a scream. Lula and I were directly behind her, and we had the same reaction. The dog had destroyed the room. Pillows were chewed. The blanket was shredded. A corner of the mattress was missing. Toilet paper was everywhere. Connie closed and locked the door behind us.
Don't anybody panic. It's probably not as bad as it looks. Cheap mattress, cheap blanket, right? How much could a pillow cost?
Uh-oh, Lula said. I think he pissed on the cable wire and shorted the television. This here's like traveling with a metal band, Lula said.
Boo was on the bed, tail wagging. But look at him, I said. He's so cute. And he looks sorry. Don't you think he looks sorry?
I think he looks happy, Lula said. I think he's smiling. I'm glad we saved this little guy. That bag of monkey duty Mrs. Apusenja deserves him.
We weren't gone that long, Connie said. How could such a little dog do all this damage?
Guess he was feeling anxiety, Lula said. Poor thing's been through a lot, what with getting dog-napped and everything. And look at him. He's just a puppy. He might even be teething. At least he didn't eat the flowers. It's nice to come back to fresh flowers in the room.
They were sent by a serial killer. They're death flowers, I said.
Well, yeah, but they're still nice, Lula said.
I looked at my watch. I had to pack. Not a lot of time to take care of this mess, I said.
Here's the plan, Connie said. We check out, and it all goes on Vinny's bill.
See that? Lula said. This dog's nothing but good luck. We get to stick it to Vinny, all because this dog was smart enough to eat the room. I think this has been a positive experience. That's my new philosophy, anyway. Nothing but positive experiences. That's why I'm driving home from here.
You gotta be kidding, Connie said. It'll take you days.
Don't matter. I'm not getting back on a plane. I'm done with planes. They aren't any fun. All that searching and starving and standing around in lines. I don't do lines. That's another part of my new philosophy. No lines. And I can take Boo with me if I drive. Me and Boo can have a road trip. I'm starting to get real excited about this. I always wanted to have a dog when I was a kid, but I never had the chance. I was dog deprived.
Works for me, Connie said. If you take Boo, we don't have the hassle of crating him and getting him on the plane.
I called valet parking and had the car brought around. I gave Lula the pepper spray and the stun gun and $200. Connie contributed another $150. It was all the money we had between us. We loaded Lula, Boo, and Lula's luggage into the car and waved goodbye.
I'm not sure if she's the smart one or the dumb one, Connie said.
There were only two of us now, and we each had a loaded gun in our pockets. We stopped at the snack bar, got a bag of food, and returned to the room to finish packing. My packing was simple. Take all the little complimentary soaps and shampoos from the bathroom and put them in my carry-on bag. Connie's packing was more complicated.
Oh, shit, Connie said. Look at this.
She was holding up the wedding photo. It had a few dog tooth marks in the lower left corner. Do you suppose you actually got married? I asked her.
I don't know. I don't remember.
She closed her eyes and groaned.
Sweet Jesus, please don't let me be married to an Elvis impersonator.
There must be some way you can find out, I said. There have to be records. Probably you can have it annulled. There was a rap on the door, and Connie and I went into panic mode for fear it was the maid. I looked out the security peephole and recognized Eric's partner from Ranger's description. The guy in the hall looked a lot like Eric, but bigger and weirder and scarier. He looked like a Vegas pit boss on steroids.
It's our chauffeur, I said. I opened the door and invited the big, scary guy in. He was dark-skinned with slicked-back black hair and dark, heavy-lidded eyes. He was wearing black cowboy boots, black leather pants, a black leather jacket, and a shiny black silk shirt that was unbuttoned half down his chest. He had a colorful crucifixion tattooed onto the back of his left hand, and he had a gun at the small of his back, under the jacket.
"I'm Miguel," he said. "I'm Eric's partner."
"Geez," I said. "We're all really sorry about Eric. I hope he's okay." Miguel gave a brief nod, which I took to mean that Eric had had his back straightened out and was recovering nicely. "I'm ready to go," I told him, handing over the cuffs and shackles and guns. "My partner is driving back. She has the rest of the hardware." Another small nod. Fine by him. Connie was packed, but she was in the middle of the room with a photo in her hand, and she was looking conflicted.
"I need to get this straightened out," she said. "I'm going to stay and catch a later flight."
"I can stay with you," I said. She shook her head.
"Not necessary. You'll be safer in Trenton with Morelli."
And Connie would be safer in Vegas without me. I gave her a hug and my room key. Miguel shouldered my bag, stepped aside, and followed me wordlessly to the elevator. This is the thing about men who never talk. It's easier to assume that they're strong and that they have the sort of wily cunning a woman wants in a bodyguard. I try not to be judgmental, but in all honesty, I'd feel less secure if Miguel rambled on about how difficult it was to find a decent silk shirt. So no conversation was okay by me, because I needed some help being brave. I wanted to think this guy could leap tall buildings in a single bound. I left the hotel and slipped into the air-conditioned security of a new black Mercedes. "Your car?" I asked Miguel.
"More or less."
He walked me to the security check, waited watchfully while I went through. No hassle this time. And then I was on my own. In theory, this was a safe zone. Still, I found a seat with my back to the wall, and I boarded last, looking for familiar or suspicious faces. I was in the last row with three empty seats next to me. Lula's seat, Connie's seat, and a seat reserved for Singh. If Singh had been with me, we would have boarded first, and if at all possible, through a side door. Walking a guy in chains down the aisle in front of the paying customers doesn't set the tone for a stress-free flight. I was happy to once again have my back to the wall, but I felt naked without hardware. It was a creepy thought that the killer might be on the plane. He could be the preppy-looking guy across the aisle, or the hairy guy three rows up. They'd watched me take my seat. Hard to tell if they wanted to kill me, or if they just didn't have anything better to do than to stare. By the time I deplaned in Newark, I was too tired to be afraid. God bless those lucky souls who can sleep while flying. I've never been one of them. I'd arranged to meet Morelli at baggage claim. I didn't have any baggage to claim, but it was the easiest pickup point. It was 7 in the morning, Jersey time. My teeth felt furry, and my eyes ached. I searched the crowd for Morelli and felt my heart skip a beat when I found him. Morelli never blended. He was movie star handsome and looked like a man you'd avoid in a fight. Women always looked twice at Morelli, but seldom approached, with the possible exception of Terry Gilman. Morelli's face softened when he saw me. He reached out and drew me to him, wrapping his arms around me. He kissed my neck and held me close for a moment.
"You look beat," he said.
He stepped back, took my bag, and smiled at me.
"But pretty."
I gave him a sideways glance. "You want something?"
"The computer, for starters."
"Always a cop."
"Not always. It's Sunday." "How tired are you?"
I was dog-tired until I saw Morelli. Now that I was next to him, I was having some non-sleeping thoughts. The non-sleeping thoughts lasted about 30 seconds into the ride home. I opened my eyes and stared up at Morelli. He was out of the truck, trying to get me awake enough to get me into the house.
He had my seatbelt off and my bag slung over his shoulder.
"Gee, Steph," he said. "Didn't you sleep on the plane?"
"I never sleep on a plane. I have to be ready in case it crashes." I heaved myself off the seat and shuffled up the sidewalk. Morelli opened the door, and I braced myself for the Bob attack. We heard him thundering through the house, coming from the kitchen. He reached the small foyer, and Morelli held up a giant dog biscuit. Bob's eyes got wide. Morelli threw the biscuit over Bob's head down the hallway, and Bob turned in mid-gallop and followed the biscuit. "Pretty smart," I said.
"I should take him to obedience training, but I never seem to get to it."
What Morelli meant was that he should try obedience training again. Bob had flunked out twice before. Morelli set the bag on the floor at the foot of the stairs and removed the computer.
"I'm not going to open this. I'm going to turn it over to the experts first thing tomorrow."
That had been my thought, too. I hadn't fooled with the computer.
"Have you told Vinny about Singh?" Morelli asked.
"I left that for Connie. She stayed behind to clean some things up."
"Vinny'll put a good spin on it. You found Singh. That's the important part. The system worked."
"I need more sleep," I said. "Wake me up when it's time for dessert."
"Bad news," Morelli said. "Dessert will be too late. We're expected for dinner at my mom's house." "We accepted this invitation 2 weeks ago," Morelli said. "It's Mary Elizabeth's birthday."
I'd totally forgotten. Mary Elizabeth is Joe's great aunt. She's a chain-smoking booze hound, and she's a retired nun. And no party for Mary Elizabeth would be complete without Grandma Bella, because Mary Elizabeth is Bella's younger sister. I got a sharp pain in my right temple, and my blood ran cold. I was having dinner with Grandma Bella.
"Are you okay?" Morelli asked. "You look sort of white."
"I'm having dinner with Grandma Bella. My life is passing in front of my eyes. I'm as good as dead. I should just stand outside and let the carnation killer shoot me."
"You have to have the right attitude about Grandma Bella."
"And that would be what?" Joe shrugged.
"She's crazy."
I slept until late afternoon. When I woke, I was in Joe's bed, still dressed in my travel clothes, partially tangled in a lightweight summer patchwork quilt. The sheets were rumpled under me, and the pillowcase was damp with sweat and humidity. Aunt Rose's gauzy curtains hung limp against the open window. The air was heavy, but the light was soft. The room felt like Joe and good sex. There were mental imprints of time spent here that didn't get smoothed away with new sheets. If I closed my eyes in this room, even if I was alone, I could feel Morelli's hands on me. And today, the room smelled like popcorn. The popcorn aroma was drifting up from the living room, where Joe and Bob were watching a ball game. I shuffled downstairs and looked in the popcorn bowl. Empty. I checked out the game. Not interesting. Joe looked over at me.
"I could call and cancel."
"You can't do that. It's a birthday."
"I'd come up with something good. I'd say you broke your leg, or you had an appendix attack. Or you insisted we stay home and have a lot of sloppy sex."
"Thanks. I appreciate the thought, but I don't think any of those would work."
"The sex would work."
I smiled at him and took the empty popcorn bowl back to the kitchen. "Nice try." I toasted a bagel, smeared it with too much butter, and ate it with the butter dripping down my arm. Do I know how to eat a bagel or what? I went back upstairs, took a shower, and got dressed for dinner. I was halfway through makeup when Morelli appeared in the bathroom doorway. He leaned a shoulder against the jamb, hands in pants pockets.
"We're late," he said. "How's it going?"
It wasn't going good. Dinner with Joe's family had me in a state. I'd accidentally poked myself in the eye with a mascara wand and almost gone blind. "It's going great," I said. "Give me another minute."
"You have a big black blob on your eye."
"I know that. Go away." 10 minutes later, I clattered down the stairs in my high-heeled strappy sandals, the swirly skirt, and a stretchy top. It was the best I could do under the circumstances. I didn't have a lot of clothes at Joe's house.
"Nice," Joe said, eyes on the skirt. I'm going to have fun with this outfit when we get home. You have panties on, right?
Right.
I don't suppose you'd want to take them off.
I don't suppose.
Doesn't hurt to ask, Morelli said with a grin. It would make dinner more interesting.
Everyone was at the table when we arrived. Joe's mom was at the head. Grandma Bella was next to her, then Mary Elizabeth. Joe's sister Kathy was next to Mary Elizabeth. Joe's Uncle Mario was at the foot of the table. Kathy's husband was seated across from her. Joe and I were seated across from Mary Elizabeth and Bella.
Sorry we're late, Joe said. Cop business.
Mary Elizabeth was looking very happy. She had an empty highball glass in front of her and a half-empty wine glass.
More like monkey business, she said.
Bella shook her finger at Joe.
Oh, the Morelli men are sex fiends!
Hey, Uncle Mario said, how's that the talk?
Mario was Bella's first cousin, and the only male Morelli left from Bella's generation. Morelli men weren't especially long-lived. Mario was small and wrinkled, but still had a full head of wiry black hair. It was rumored he colored it with shoe polish. Grandma Bella fixed an eye on Mario.
Are you telling me you're not a sex fiend?
There's a difference between an Italian stallion and a sex fiend. I'm an Italian stallion.
Joe filled our wine glasses.
Salute, he said.
Everyone held their glasses high.
Salute.
I didn't see you in the church today, Grandma Bella said to Joe.
I had to miss today, Joe said.
And last week. And the week before that. And, come to think of it, last time Joe was in church was Christmas.
I prayed for you,
Bella told him. Joe took a sip of wine and looked at Bella over the rim of his glass.
Thanks.
And I prayed that the bambinos would get over the death of their mother.
Joe's mother gripped her wine glass and narrowed her eyes at Bella. I stopped breathing. Everyone else slumped in their seat with an, oh boy, here it comes, sigh.
The bambinos? Joe asked.
You will have many bambinos. The mother will die. It will be very sad. I saw it in a vision.
I bit down hard on my lower lip. My poor little bambinos.
Don't worry, Bella said to me. It's not you. The woman in the vision was a blonde.
Chapter 11. Joe drank more wine and draped an arm around my shoulders.
At least you're not the dead woman in this vision.
Mrs. Morelli threw a dinner roll at him and hit him in the head.
That's a stupid thing to say to a woman. Sometimes you're just like your father.
She crossed herself and looked penitent.
God rest his soul.
Everyone at the table crossed themselves except Joe.
God rest his soul, everyone said.
And you,
Mrs. Morelli said to her mother-in-law,
no more with the visions.
I can't help I have visions, Grandma Bella said. I'm an instrument of a god.
This brought a lot more crossing, and Uncle Mario muttered something that I think included the words devil woman. Bella turned on Mario.
You watch your step, old man. I'll put the eye on you.
The table went silent. No one wanted to mess with the eye. The eye was Italian voodoo. While all this was going on, Mary Elizabeth had put away three glasses of wine.
I love a party,
Mary Elizabeth said, her words slightly slurred, her eyes slightly crossed. She raised her wine glass.
Here's to me.
We all raised our wine glasses.
To Mary Elizabeth.
When we were all stuffed with chicken and red sauce and meatballs and macaroni casseroles, Mrs. Morelli brought out the desserts. Plates of Italian cookies from People's Bakery. Fresh-filled cannoli from Panorama Musicale. Cheeses from Porfirio's. And the birthday cake from Little Italy. By now it was sweltering in the Morelli dining room. All the windows were open, and Mrs. Morelli had brought a fan in to circulate air. Sweat was running down my breastbone, soaking my shirt. My hair was stuck to my face, and my mascara was not living up to its waterproof promise. No one cared about the heat. Everyone but Joe and his mom was shit-faced, me included. Candles were lit on the cake, raising the room temperature by another 10 degrees. We all sang Happy Birthday, Mary Elizabeth blew out the candles, and Mrs. Morelli made the first cut in the cake. Grandma Bella slammed her hands palm down on the table and tossed her head back. She was having a vision. Everyone at the table groaned.
"I see death," Grandma Bella said. "A woman."
More groaning from around the table.
"I see white carnations."
"Don't worry about it, honey," Morelli whispered in my ear. "There are always white carnations."
"This woman who died," I asked Grandma Bella, "is she a blonde?" Grandma Bella opened her eyes and looked at me.
"She has a curly brown hair," Bella said. "Shoulder length."
My hair. Good thing I was too drunk to care.
"That's the vision," Bella said. "I'm tired now. I need to lay down."
Bella always got tired after a vision. We watched her leave the table and go upstairs.
"Good riddance," Mary Elizabeth said. "She's such a downer."
And we all made the sign of the cross and had dessert. Morelli poured me into his truck and drove me back to his house, where he dragged me out of the truck and propped me against the passenger side door.
"If you're gonna throw up, it'd be good if you could do it out here," he said. "It's supposed to rain. It'll wash away."
I thought about that for a moment and decided I wasn't going to throw up. I took a step and went down to one knee.
"Whoops," I said. "The curb's in my way."
Morelli hauled me up, slung me over his shoulder, and carried me into the house and up the stairs. I flopped onto Morelli's bed and put one foot on the floor to stop the whirlies.
"Wanna have sex?" I asked.
Morelli grinned.
"I think I'll take a rain check on that one. I'm still worried you're gonna be sick. Do you want me to help you get undressed?"
"No, but it'd be good if you could make the room stand still."
I was awake, but I was afraid to open my eyes. I suspected hell was lurking just beyond my eyelids. My brain didn't fit in my head, and the little devil guys were poking hot sticks in my eyeballs. I cracked an eye and squinted up at Morelli.
"Help,"
I whispered. Morelli had a coffee cup in his hand.
"You really tied one on last night."
"Did I make an idiot of myself?"
"Honey, you were at a dinner party with my family. On your best day, you couldn't even compete in the idiot contest."
"Your mother isn't an idiot."
"My mother likes you."
"Really?"
I eased myself into a sitting position, put both hands to my head, and applied pressure in an attempt to prevent my brain from exploding.
"I'm never doing this again, never. I'm done drinking. Okay, maybe a beer once in a while, but that's it."
"I went out and got the cure," Morelli said. "I have to leave for work, but I want to make sure you're okay first."
I opened my other eye. I sniffed the air.
"The cure? Really?"
"Downstairs," Morelli said. "I left them in the kitchen. Do you want me to bring them up?"
"Not necessary." I was on my feet. I was moving, slowly. I was at the stairs, one step at a time. I was going to make it. I put my hands over my eyes to keep my eyeballs from falling out of my head while I worked the stairs. Then I was on firm floor. I inched forward. I was in the kitchen. I squinted into the red haze, and I saw it. It was sitting on the little wooden kitchen table, a large steaming bag of McDonald's French fries and a large cup.